What is up, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle, where we talk about work, ministry, and the people who make an art out of bringing them together. This is episode 12, and we are talking to my friend Jen. She is the director of Replanted Ministry, which is a ministry that does support groups for adoptive and foster care families. She is also the director of Refresh Chicago, which is a conference held in October for those same families in the Midwest. And about 4 years ago, Jen approached JJ and I about being support group leaders in her ministry. And from that time on, we have been full on into the Replanted and Refresh world. We have hosted a Replanted support group for 4 years. I'm on the board that helps make decisions for that ministry. I'm on the support team or the planning team for Refresh Chicago. And yeah, I pretty much just do whatever Jen tells me to sometimes, which is great because she is just this woman of great passion. She has amazing vision for helping out adoptive and foster care families. It comes from a real place of seeing the needs of children in the foster care system when she was a therapist working with those children. And she's just done some amazing things around this ministry. It's now national. It's really cool. So I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from her. She has such a heart for this stuff. She talks a lot about being trauma informed. She talks a lot about TBRI and some of these ways that we can educate ourselves about how trauma affects children. Make sure right now that you are subscribed to Theology of Hustle on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And also, if you get a second, I would really appreciate a rating and review on iTunes or, you know, wherever you can. A lot of you droid people, I totally get it. You can't do the iTunes reviews, but yeah, I appreciate the shares, the social media. You know, if you're really liking what's going on in Theology of Hustle, I just ask you to help me get the word out about what's going on, and that you would just let me know your thoughts, and if you have ideas on people I should be interviewing, let me know. I love interacting, and I hope you enjoy this interview with Jen. Well, hi, Jen. Welcome to Theology of Hustle. So glad you could join me from Texas.
Yeah, great to be here.
I have so many interviewees from Texas. It's awesome, but yeah. I miss Texas.
Yeah, I'm learning how to be a Texan right now. I'm still a newbie.
Right. Right. So what has that Canadian transition been like to a Texan?
I hang out in the AC a lot. It's great. Or live in the pool. So
that is a benefit of having a pool around.
Yeah. Nice. It's fun though. Right. I didn't experience winter for the first time, which was hilarious because a lot of Texans thought they got one of the worst winters they've had in a long time. So we have some differences of definitions, you know.
Was it weird though to not like really be in the midst of snow and like have that sort of season?
Yeah, it was hilarious. It was weird, but you don't get cabin fever here. So it was. There was times my husband and I would be sitting outside in January eating dinner. And I was like, never in my life have I sat outside in January without a parka and
well,
enjoyed dinner.
So, right. Totally. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah, all right. Good.
Cool. All right. So why don't you just start us off here by just telling us your story?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm from Canada originally. I moved to the U.S. when I went to Wheaton College to get my grad degree in clinical psychology. So I got my master's, and it was during that time I got a job working as a crisis counselor and was just feeling like, you know, I love working with kids. I had always known I really wanted to work with kids and walk alongside them, but doing crisis work, and it was very short term in nature, was just a bit of a miss for me. I wanted to do more and be more involved with the kids. And as a crisis counselor, I could only see them for 3 months and then I had to transition them. And yeah, it was during that time that I was just hanging out with a friend and just kind of commiserating, like, oh, I'm not quite feeling fulfilled in my job. And she was like, hey, Jen, we're looking for a therapist in our agency. And she was working in foster care and doing counseling with kids. And so I was like, yeah, actually, I really feel like that might be a really good fit for me. And so I interviewed and got the job and, you know, started working with kids and doing trauma counseling. And it was very quickly, I realized, like, this is my heartbeat. This is exactly where I want to be. You know, I was working with kids that had experienced a lot of abuse and neglect, you know, 3 to 18 year olds. I was also doing some birth parent counseling as well and trying to help with reunification efforts, and just really felt like this, you know, just felt alive. Like, this gave me a lot of purpose and meaning. And walking alongside the kids and the families in general. And so, yeah, it's hard not to be moved when you're sitting in counseling sessions with kids that are just sharing like horrendous things they've experienced or just weeping because they want to go home. You know, there's so many feelings, and it's foster care is such a big experience for kids. And so it was really a beautiful experience to be able to sit with them in those parts of their stories and just help them in their healing process. So,
yeah, that's awesome. I can only imagine. Some of your stories are just hard to listen to. But so, and this is where I'm really excited to interview you, because you're like the original hustler in my mind. Like, you're somebody that I'm like, man, she outworks me like crazy.
So I have bad boundaries. It's hard to prompts, say. Yeah,
well, you know, they're maybe one in the same sometimes, you know, I mean,
right.
What are you going to do though? Right. So, but your experience though, prompted you to, start an organization. Do you mind talking?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I was working alongside these families and would sit with a lot of foster parents that were just really baffled by what was happening with their kids. And then also just feeling really alone, and really isolated. Like, people didn't understand what they were going through, and how hard the journey was and how deep the trenches could be. And, I just kept feeling over and over, like, where is the church in this? The church is so quick to say, like, yes, you know, the cause of the fatherless is near and dear to the heart of God. That's so scriptural. And so we're very pro adoption and foster care and caring for the fatherless. But we don't see many churches showing up after that, you know, message, and showing up in the trenches when families, have received a placement. And so I just kept feeling like, where's the church? Like, we need to do a better job of really living this out in a holistic way. And so, yeah, it was, you know, I grew up in a Christian Reformed church. I was not charismatic in any way. I came to the US and I was like, evangelical, what does that word mean? I have no idea. So but I really feel like God was just opening doors in ways that I had never experienced God before, which is really cool. But yeah, it was during that time, a good friend of mine was moving back to California and having a farewell party. And so we were having a farewell party, and he was like, hey, Jen, you should chat with Deacon Gregory. At the time, his name was Father, or not Father, he is now, but was Deacon Gregory Whitaker, and he was adopted. And so we just started chatting, and he's like, hey, Jen, what do you see as the church's role in this? And so I just started spewing off a lot of different ideas of how I would really wanted the church to be more engaged. And he was kind of like, okay, let's make that happen. So, so it was shortly after that, you know, he took it to our senior pastoral staff, at Church of the Resurrection, and they were like, yes, let's do this. And at the same time, like, God was really stirring, I feel like, the hearts of people in our congregation and other churches in our community. And, so a bunch of us got together and said, hey, we want to start a ministry, and we want this ministry to be a unifying voice for the body of Christ. And we want to do this together, and we want to be partners in this. And we really want to just love our adoptive and foster and safe families community in the Wheaton area. And so one of the first things we wanted to do was to support our families well. We didn't want to say, like, yes, you should foster or adopt, and then not have any support for them to receive. So one of the first things we started was doing support groups and small groups, just to bring our families together in relationship, because it can be such a beautiful experience when you can sit and share what's going on in your life, and people can say, me too, like, I get what you're going through. And so we just saw a lot of families wanting to come together in this shared journey, because you know what, honestly, there is some uniqueness to foster and adoptive parenting. A lot of kids that come into our adoptive and foster homes have experienced a lot of trauma. And with trauma, there's a lot of emotional and behavioral issues that the kids can experience. And they're not bad kids, but they've had experiences that have really shaped them. And so we just saw that fellow adoptive and foster families really understand that firsthand because they're living it out. Whereas sometimes other people in the community can say like, oh, well, what's the difference? It's parenting, you know? And so sometimes there can be like judgments and criticisms and various things. And so we really wanted to say like, hey, we want to be a ministry that's about grace and love and safety. And we want to do this together. And so, yeah, that's kind of how we got started. And from there, we just unleashed a ton of different things like parents' night outs, events, conferences. And it's been a real roller coaster, but far bigger than I imagined. God had for us. So it's been kind of cool.
Yeah. And just to see the people come along, I mean, you were such a person of vision. You brought JJ along on this replanted ride, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago now. And just to watch the organization flourish has just been pretty incredible. Can you talk just a little bit about like where it is now, like what's sort of going on and yeah.
You know, when we first started Replanted, our whole motto really was, or my motto anyways, was even if we're just supporting 2 or 3 families, they're worth it. They have such significant worth and we want to encourage them in the kingdom work that they're doing. But what we quickly realized was that bringing families together in this journey and helping them form these like life-giving relationships was really valuable. And so over time, we just kept seeing the community grow and grow and grow. And we went from 1 group to 10 groups in Chicago. And then just recently, I feel like the Lord opened up a door where we got connected with a ministry in Seattle. And they've been hosting this really beautiful conference called Refresh. And I don't even like to use the word conference because it's really such an experience. You know, it's more like a retreat, honestly. But it's this like, hey, we see you, yeah, you're not totally alone. We want to encourage you, yeah. We want to refresh you. They like do no way gifts, you know, they're like launching beach balls out into the audience, you know, they're just doing, there's a nap room, you know, just really, the conference is really about like equipping and inspiring and also refreshing us, our weary parents. And so they were doing that conference out there and they were feeling like, man, we've got this 2-day beautiful experience for our parents, but then so many of them go back into isolation for the other 363 days of the year. And so they said like, hey, can you help us build groups? Like we really want to bring our families together because these groups are as much for the kids as well. That's one thing I forgot to mention. They're not just for the parents. We want our kids to come together too and say like, hey, there's other kids that understand my journey as well, you know, wrestling with what it means to be adopted or to be in foster care and be living in limbo for so long. And, you know, so to be able to bring our kids together in that relationship is really cool. But yeah, so last year was the first year that we decided to help kind of at a national level, other communities and churches establish emotional and spiritual groups for families to connect with one another. And we brought Refresh to Chicago. So we've kind of partnered together to do this, this work, and that's been really cool. So we're on year 2 now of helping build groups, and it's been really cool. So
yeah, that's awesome. Such exciting stuff going on. The need is so great. And one thing I really wanted to have you speak to, and something you've taught me a lot about, is just what the trauma background does to a child. Cause I think there's a lot of people in the church out there that like, oh, you're just bringing in a kid, you're saving them, you know, you're just parenting, right? So what's the big deal? Can you talk a little bit just about, I'm opening a huge can of worms. I understand you. But do you mind just sort of talking about what led you to really understand the need? Because you're not an adoptive or foster care parent yourself, but you saw this great need and started this organization. So what was it that led you to that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, more from a professional standpoint, we know like the value of support is so immensely helpful in somebody's journey, whether that's personal or family. But support is just, it can be a big lifeline. And so I really felt like, and I also felt like there was so much judgment and criticism or advice giving in the adoption foster care world from outside in. And there was really just this lack of understanding of how trauma affects kids. And so, you know, there is sometimes this mindset, you know, that, oh, we're rescuing kids or love is enough and everything will be, you know, as soon as they come into our home, this will be good, you know. And then when that honeymoon phase ends and it's really hard, you know, we had a lot of parents that were just really baffled and confused. And, you know, am I a failure as a parent? Did I miss God's calling? Did I like get that wrong? Like, did I make a terrible mistake? Now my family and friends, like, you know, our kids have very aggressive behaviors and they don't want us around anymore, you know? And so we just really, I saw a community just really kind of heartbroken and hurting and not really knowing what to do. And these kids are so precious and beautiful, but they're really acting out of a place of wound. I had heard a quote once that symptoms are the truth you cannot speak. And that's really what's happening for our kiddos. When they're acting, you know, aggressively or, you know, having these like temper tantrums or deregulated states for over an hour, you know, and it's like, why is this lasting so long? Like, I don't get it. You know, that these aren't bad kids, but it's because the trauma has impacted them so significantly. And so I really wanted to help the community understand, what was happening for the kids, that these are not bad kids. You know, you see that happen sometimes, you know, in schools or, you know, it's like, oh, they're a foster kid, so that's why they're the bad kid, you know? And it's like, no. And by labeling our kids in that way, is really damaging their sense of worth. So trauma really impacts the kids. So we can think of trauma in a lot of different ways. Some of the more obvious ones we think about are like, you know, sexual or physical abuse. Neglect is a traumatic experience for kids. Being exposed to substances in utero is trauma. You know, having a hard birth or being medically fragile and being in the NICU, these are all traumas that a kid experiences. And we know when a child experiences trauma, it actually impairs their brain. So, you know, there's been a lot of research that's looked at CT scans of children's brains and seen that it changes the neurobiology when a child experiences trauma. And so we kind of like to think about a trauma brain, like, you know, when you think of a brain, think of it like a house. You've got the upstairs part of your house and then the downstairs part of your house. And there's this fancy little part in the brain called the amygdala, and that's really responsible. That's the trauma area of your brain. And so when you experience something traumatic, the amygdala takes over and it kind of turns off the other lights in the house. And so what happens then is when a child experiences something traumatic and the amygdala gets activated, that's where you see children go into fight, flight, or freeze. So, you know, you'll see kids just run away, or, you know, they'll become really combative pretty easily. They'll get deregulated for long periods of time. Some kids will just be flat, so they won't have any expression. They'll be kind of numb, you know, like, just kind of unaware of what's happening with their body. And so when that amygdala gets turned on, it turns off the upstairs part of our brain. And when you think of what's in the upstairs part of the brain, we have things like our regulation, so self-regulating, our ability to cope. That's where our language skills are. That's where our moral compass is, executive functioning. So really, you know, it's shutting all those things off. So no wonder our kiddos are stealing and lying and like can't calm or can't soothe themselves. So there's a tremendous impact there. And it can take a long time for kiddos to experience the healing that they need, from those things, because what happens with trauma is, I'll give an example. This might be helpful, because some of our parents will say like, well, they're in a safe situation now. They're living with us. Like, why are they still having a hard time? You know, they're not in a dangerous situation anymore. But there's a difference between a child knowing they're safe and feeling they're safe. And I think this gives a really good example. So imagine you are a soldier, and you are training to go overseas. And so you're trained that, you know, when you're in a threatening situation or you hear gunfire, you drop to the ground, right? So you're deployed, you're sent overseas, and you're in active danger now, right? And so you're hearing gunfire, and every time you drop to the ground. And then one day you're out and you hear gunfire and you get hit, maybe just in the hand. So not life-threatening, but it's a very felt danger, right? So you go to the medical tent, you get bandaged up, and then you get sent back to the U.S., okay? So now imagine you're in Target, and you're buying milk or something, and then you're going back to your car to put the milk in your car and head home, and you hear a car backfire. What's your initial response going to be? You're going to drop to the ground. Now, is there a danger, a threat in Target in the same way? No, right? But your body senses that danger and it kicks, the amygdala takes over, and boom, you're going into fight, flight, or freeze. Okay. And so that's what's happening with our kiddos. And so it takes a while to disarm that amygdala so that they feel that safety. And that can take a long time.
So is every kid, I mean, is it safe to say that every kid in the foster and adoptive world has a form of trauma?
Yeah, I would say for the most part, almost all children do have some sort of trauma because foster care, they wouldn't be in foster care if there wasn't some sort of trauma experience. So whether that's substance exposure in utero, neglect or physical or sexual abuse, something has happened that they're in foster care. And then same with adoptive children. Even, I've had parents sit with me and be like, well, I adopted my child at birth though. So how could they have experienced something traumatic? But we know that babies in utero experience trauma, and they experience the mother's like hormones and stress levels. And so even a mom who is choosing adoption for her child, that's a highly stressful decision to make. And so for those 9 months, that child is getting the anxiety hormone, the cortisol that the mom is experiencing. And that can be like a trauma experience, right? And so we're kind of setting our children at a different kind of baseline, I guess. And so, especially children, the first 3 months that a child is born is where they really develop the sense of trust and safety. And so in a situation that's relatively healthy, right, a baby cries and mom comes and they soothe, or caregiver comes and they soothe that baby. And so the baby learns to that they have a voice and that they can trust that the caregiver is going to come and take care of their needs, right? If you have a child that was in an orphanage or institutionalized in that way, their cries probably went unanswered for prolonged periods of time because you don't have as many caregivers as there are children. And so they just can't meet all the needs. And additionally, sensory wise, we know that the brain is taking in so much and it's forming and it's growing. We have all these like fancy things called neurotransmitters in our brain that are developing. And those first 3 months is a really important part of development. And so when a child isn't being touched and like receiving all of those sensory inputs, that can also impair brain development. And so, a lot of times then we've got kids that have a trauma brain as a result. Now, the good news is trauma brains can experience healing. And so we can reshape that brain development and we can get kids back onto a more of a normal brain development trajectory, which is super hopeful. But thing is, it takes a lot of time. There's no quick fix at all. And so that journey can be, it can be long and difficult sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. It's hard for me to talk about this every time. Like every time we talk about this stuff, it's just so hard. Just, I don't have that background, the history, that I didn't experience trauma in those ways or, in the adoption. And just to think what these kids have gone through and just trying to like play catch up in a lot of ways, or trying to like express their needs and not being able to, just it's hard for me to even fathom, I guess, so.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to share a story or two. I think that's really where Replanted comes in, because, parenting kids with trauma histories is just so hard. And so that journey is hard. And then a lot of times I see the support systems not really understand the impact of trauma on the kids. And so then they think it's, well, the parent isn't doing a good enough job, and that's why the kids are acting this way. Or, they maybe have a little bit of understanding of trauma and they're just like, I don't even know what to do, but I know like I don't feel equipped to meet the needs of the kids. And so they just stop showing up, which is super hurtful and isolating for families. But I get it. I had a little boy who came to my therapy office, and he really wanted to be reunified with his mom. mom's boyfriend had been abusing the children. And he, you know, with all the trauma that was happening, he was just so, just having such a hard time. He would like break windows to try to like cut his wrist. He's seven, you know, like sometimes the behaviors are just so like, you know, significant and overwhelming. This child is in pain and it's hard to know what to do. You know, like, how do I help the child experience healing in this? You know, I get it. So it can be overwhelming, you know, but I think that's where we really need to roll up our sleeves and say, okay, we got to really understand trauma. We got to all take the trainings, not just the parents. If I'm a grandparent, an aunt, a church leader who's got families that have fostered or adopted, like I need to seek to also show up with them. And that means understanding what the kids are going through, being equipped myself and being consistent and showing up. Because, you know, I watch people so often say like, we're going to be there. And I've heard this from parents myself that are part of the Replanted ministry. You know, people are like, oh, what you're doing is so great. And then 3 months later, when it's hard, they're nowhere to be found. And that's so hurtful for families and kids, right? It just affirms that abandonment issue they've already experienced, you know? And so my heart is really just for the body of Christ to like show up and to persevere, you know, and to love our families well, and to be helpful and not hurtful in support.
Gosh. Yes. So yes, 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 yes. I love that. I mean, this is such a near and dear thing to my heart, you know, and, I love this vision that you've got going. And of course I do. I do whatever you tell me to do pretty much. So.
Curry does a lot of things for Replanted. So,
you know, whatever needs to be done. Right.
Yeah.
So can we talk, let's jump into a little bit of what, where the hope lies. Like, can we talk a little bit about just what that healing looks like, how you go about healing a brain with trauma, mm-hmm. and all that?
Yeah. Oof. Okay. I'll try to give you just the high points here. I could talk for days on this one. Yeah. There's a lot of different things to do when it comes to healing. I think any child that has experienced trauma should be working alongside a therapist. The family should definitely have professional support. And I would say seek out someone that is really trauma informed, because, you know, there's very specific things that can be helpful. And then there's some specific things that cannot be super helpful, when it comes to helping heal a trauma brain for a child. So I'll give an example of sometimes why parents receive some judgment. So we know with a child that has experienced trauma that typically punitive and consequence-oriented approaches actually further activate the trauma brain. So grounding, timeouts, taking away privileges, things like that. So sometimes people look at parents like, oh, you're too lenient. That's why your child's having this meltdown. But actually, they're needing to enter and connect with their child in a different way, because we know if we continue to reinforce consequences and are more punitive in our approach, we're keeping the amygdala turned on and we're not going to get anywhere really with the healing process. So what are a few things that we can do? You know, obviously we want to help our kiddos with the feeling of safety, right? Knowing that they're safe. We want to help turn off the amygdala as much as we can. So some things, connection is a really big thing. So always connecting with our child, and playfulness. So playfulness can be really helpful in disarming fear. So making sure we're playing as much as possible. If a child is starting to get deregulated, that we are trying to engage with them in that and not removing them or shaming them when they're upset. But that we're really kind of sticking it out with them. So there's kind of a few different like levels that can be helpful. So one is trying to keep things as playful as possible, staying at that level as much as we can. So even when we're instructing our kiddos, like, you know, we need them to empty the dishwasher or something, trying to make that playful and animated and fun for them. If you need to do a redirection, trying to do that in a fun way. Sometimes we can come in making like a mountain out of a molehill. And so it can be really helpful. There's been some research that shows when you keep things as playful as possible, it's almost impossible to have that fear response turned on in the brain. So we like to stay there as much as possible, but we know our kids do get deregulated and they do get upset. And so trying to keep their world organized is really helpful. So a lot of times with our trauma brain, when all areas of the brain get turned off and the amygdala is on, we have to remind ourselves of that. And so trying to organize our environment for our kids can be helpful. So sometimes it might be, you know, giving them like two choices and kind of organizing things for them. And now these aren't two choices in a negative way, but in positive statements. So not like either put your shoes on or you get a timeout. Like those aren't the two choices I'm talking about. You know, it's two positive statements where it's like, hey, you can put your shoes on or I can help you put your shoes on. Which one do you want to pick? Right. And so helping our kids organize their environment and also giving them voice so that they can pick. Cause a lot of kids with trauma have some, like they want control, you know, they want to be in charge because they've learned that as their survival technique for so long. And so helping give them a voice there too can be really helpful. But when our kids do get to deregulated states, we really want to stay present with them and be their co-regulators. We know that kids that have experienced trauma are less than half their developmental age, typically emotionally. And so even if you're dealing with a 10-year-old, you know, in chronological age, you're probably actually more responding to a 5-year-old in their emotional age. And so it's important to keep that in mind when we're looking at expectations and goals for our child. But when our kids do get upset, it's a matter of really staying present with them, not withdrawing, but helping show them coping and ending on high notes after they've had those deregulated states can be really helpful as well. So, you know, you always want to communicate preciousness to kids. You want to make their days as predictable as possible too. Our kids can experience a lot of anxiety when they don't know what's coming next. And so, yeah, you know, I know I'm throwing a ton out here, but visual cues can be a lot more helpful than verbal. We know that verbally kids, more than 7 words, consecutive words from us, they don't digest anything past that typically. So visual cues are really helpful. You know, we'll print pictures of coping skills, various things like that to help our kid, help cue our kids. These can all be really helpful strategies. And then, you know, kids with trauma have a really hard time with transition. And so, again, making their day as predictable as possible. If you're going somewhere, letting them know when you're going to leave, or if you have to separate from them, letting them know when you're returning. In a way that a child understands. So children don't understand like abstract language until their teen years. And so if you'll say like, I'll be home tonight, that's very vague. So, you know, I'll be home after dinner, but before you go to bed, you know, so being concrete in that way can help decrease a child's anxiety. Yeah, there's so much I could say, Curry. It's so hard to narrow it down. And
but I totally get that. Yes. Yeah.
But my one thing is, you know, there are a lot of resources for understanding trauma. And so if you are a parent that is raising a child who has been impacted by trauma, or you are somebody that's an aunt or an uncle, friend to a child, you know, I would really encourage you to seek out some of those trainings and be informed, because that makes such a difference. Like I've sat with so many parents that were like, oh, you know, my mom finally read The Connected Child and she understands now what's going on, you know, and it's like, yes, that is really helpful. We are really caring for our children well when we seek to understand what's going on for them.
Yeah. I'll have you just send me a list of like stuff that you would recommend resourcing families with. Mm-hmm. And I'll put that all in the show notes so people can, you know, buy books to their heart's content and read them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that really is, I mean, this is a deep dive. I've been in this world for a few years now, and I'm still just now feeling equipped to use the tools of you know, trauma-informed parenting and such. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something I wanted to hit on as you were talking, I've seen a lot of videos by Dr. Karen Purvis, you know, and the TBRI mm-hmm. stuff. It is always amazing to me how close trauma-informed parenting is to the gospel. You know what I mean? They go hand in hand in so many ways. Can you speak to a little bit of just that, like how you see God's hand in some of this, this work?
Yeah. I love the TBRI model for sure in that way. I think what I really love about it is it's really about loving a child right where they are at, right? That this is not, you know, love that's conditioned on them acting well or behaving appropriately or experiencing some sort of healing, but it's saying like, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and I'm going to love you right where you are at. And we're going to do this together. And it might take a really long time and it might not, but I'm in this with you. And I really feel like that's like Jesus' message to us. Like I'm here through all of it with you. I'm going to keep showing up. I'm going to keep loving you. And I'm going to keep reminding you how precious you are. And that's really part of the messaging that we want to send our kiddos who have experienced trauma is like, I see you and I see the mess and I still love you. And I still am going to show up and I'm going to be here through this journey with you. And so I would say that's really kind of for me it at the heart of it in its simplest way. You know, we all need grace. I think that's one of the things too, I see like our kids need so much grace and what they've gone through and what they're currently going through. Parents need so much grace in their parenting. I have so many parents will sit with me and be like, I've been doing it all wrong. Or I lost it today. Like it was so hard. I couldn't connect. You know, I raised my voice. I couldn't do it, you know? And it's like, yeah, none of us are perfect. This is hard. It's hard work. But it doesn't say, you know, in scripture, well done, good and successful servant. It says, well done, good and faithful servant. And so it's really about faithfully showing up and loving our kids well, loving yourself well. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of where I see that overlap really occurring, is just in that grace and receiving that grace, and just continuing to show up and being faithful in that kingdom work, you know, and it's hard and it's okay for it to feel hard and it's okay for you to feel joy and also just like frustration and overwhelmness and anger. Those are all okay things to feel, you know, in that journey. And so just having grace for yourself in that, I think is really important.
No, yes, so much. And it really is the grace. And even when I parent, so we have, our youngest is adopted, but our two older ones are biological, but we parent along these principles with all of our children, just because it doesn't come naturally just to show your children grace all the time, right? It can be so frustrating when they don't get it and they're not acting like you expect them, but just understand like, no, you need grace just like I need grace, right? Like we're all sort of in this together. I love that. And in a lot of ways, I mean, all of that stuff is exactly what Replanted and Refresh do, right? I mean, showing that grace, making it okay, right? So can you talk a little bit about the ways that people could get involved with Replanted and Refresh if they wanted to? Just
absolutely. Oh my goodness. Yes, get involved. there's a few different ways. It just kind of depends on where people are at. I would say from an individual level, if you're somebody that's like, hey, I really have a heart for this. I want to do something. You know, there's always volunteer opportunities that we're looking for. So whether it's helping, you know, with the conferences, helping plan, or just volunteering at the actual event, I would say for Replanted, we're always looking for people to host groups in their home. And what that looks like is, you know, preparing a meal for the adults and just having a space where kids and parents can come together. You know, providing childcare for our children and just helping with the child programming part of our ministry as well. The one thing I would say is like, we're always looking for people to volunteer, but we really want you to show up on a regular basis. And so when we ask, you know, you to do this, we really want you to invest in the families and love them. And same with our kids. We really want you to just shepherd and love our kids well, and just be faithful in that. And so, you know, our groups, we just do one time a month, meetings for our groups. But we want you to do it for the year. We don't want it to be a one and done sort of experience. You know, even outside of Replanted, if you've got families in your community that you're connected to who have adopted or fostered, just being really intentional about always showing up and talking to the parents, you know, sometimes our first response is like, well, I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to not do anything. And I would say like that can be so hurtful, you know, to a family. And so many of our families are in isolation because they've received that messaging, you know, like, oh, our Sunday school program just can't handle your child. So, you know, they have to stay with you or you have to come to Sunday school, you know, like these are frequent things I hear from parents. Right. And so what does it look like to sit down with a parent and say, hey, I want to love you and I want to love your kids. Tell me how to do that well. What do you need? How can I support you? And then commit to doing at least one thing a month, you know, and make sure it's something that you can do. So whether it's maybe starting small, maybe it's not realistic for you to take kids on play dates, but maybe it is realistic where you can drop off a meal one time a month and a note or something, you know. So assess what your commitment level is. But don't overcommit and underdeliver because that can be really hard. So those are some ways to get involved, you know, at more of a community church level. Replanted is really helping to mobilize the local church and empower local leadership to do to support families well. And so we help provide the infrastructure and resources to do that. So we help launch groups, you know, in a lot of different places around the U.S. And so if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, I'd love to get my church more involved and I'd love to partner, that's what we are. Replanted is just a huge network of churches and organizations and people with a heart to love our families well. And so we can help you with that. But, you know, Jason Johnson is a kind of a big leader in the orphan care world, I guess you could say. And one thing he says is not everyone's called to be a foster adoptive parent, but everyone's capable of doing something. What's your something? So I'd encourage you to just start there. Think about what that could be, what that could look like, and then take the next step. And it could be as simple as like, hey, I'm going to show up at some trauma trainings because I want to love, you know, my brother and sister-in-law well. And, you know, but do something.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that just being informed is part of it, because I just don't think a lot of people, it's hard for people to get it. I think until I had gone through the process myself, I didn't even really get it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I love that, just sort of being informed and getting out there and doing something. Yeah. Okay. So what is on the horizon for Replanted for you? I mean, in your vocation, like, where are you headed? I know you're always headed somewhere big.
I know, right? Yeah.
What do you got going?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Replant is at a really exciting time. When did we start? What, 2011? We launched our first group in 2012. So how old are we now? Like 6 years, 7 years old now? Yeah. It's so crazy. So I'm doing Replanted kind of full time right now. And our goal is to really continue to help communities that are wanting to develop support systems for foster and adoptive families to do so. And so we're doing a lot of different pilot programs right now with organizations and churches around the U.S., West Coast, East Coast, all the coasts, which is really exciting. But we're in the process right now of transitioning from a ministry to becoming a nonprofit, because we've gotten too big to just keep doing this all as volunteers right now. And so our heart is really to stay, our DNA is going to be very central to the church and being a ministry in that capacity, but we also need to resource the ministry well. And so we're excited about just being able to share our resources with other churches and communities that want to develop support, you know, through our trainings and various things that we do, especially around the groups. We've got Refresh Chicago that we do right now and plan, which is just a super exciting time. So we're doing that.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about Refresh Chicago. I'm super excited.
Guys, it's going to be so good. Come everyone. Doesn't matter. This conference is really for everyone, but it's going to be good. We have Ann Voskamp coming. She's a really awesome author. Wes Stafford, he started Compassion International. And this guy's story is unbelievable. Like, I cannot wait for people to hear his story. He's going to be there. We've got Deborah Gray coming in. She's a trauma expert. Then we have Darren Jones and Amanda Purvis coming in from Texas Christian University. They're part of the TBRI team. And so they're going to be really helping do trainings around trauma-informed care and what that looks like. Who else do we have? We have a whole bunch of former foster youth and adoptees that are going to come in and share their stories, because their voice is so important to hear. We've got Jason Johnson coming in to help equip leaders and people that want to take the next step. And we're going to also do that as part of Replanted and sharing the how, you know, we've done it. But guys, it's so fun. I can't even tell you. You're going to get a paddle. It's going to have a fun word on it. And that's going to be a connection point, you know, to just see like, hey, there's other people in the room that understand what I'm going through. You know, we do know.
Well, I think we should mention Ira.
Oh, yeah.
Though. Can you talk a little bit about the
Curry,
free conference?
Thanks. I like, guys, Ira Chasnov. he's coming to Refresh Chicago this year, and this guy is the leading, like the world expert in substance exposure in utero. So if you are raising a child that was exposed to alcohol or drugs, or you're connected to a child that has been, you really want to, this is the guy you want to hear from. And he is going to teach you all about the impact of that, all of it, what to do, how to respond, expectations, you know, all, everything. It's a full pre-conference day, but it's a really big deal. Like, he's good. So you really want to clear your schedule and make sure you can come, and hear him. So.
Yeah. Yeah. JJ and I went in Seattle and it like changed my life. I mean, it was awesome. He is the expert. If you want somebody to talk to you about this topic, he's the expert.
We have a silent disco that's going to be part of Refresh Chicago. There's going to be no wait gifts, a nap room, just fun game rooms. Like, it's going to be just a really cool time. So the introverts that are listening to this going like, oh my goodness, don't worry, we've got you covered too. but it's just a really beautiful time to come together. And you don't have to be an adoptive or foster parent to come. This really is meant for anyone, especially if you want to take that next step in supporting families well. If you're a professional, we have professional CEs. So we've got psychologists, licensed counselors, social workers, and nurses. This conference is pre-approved for training credit for you. Foster parents that need training credit, you can get it too. So that's an extra perk, which is super fun, but it's going to be good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Plus, you get to see Jen and I at this conference. We'll be hanging out as well.
Also, Curry's going to be on our main stage, so let's not like forget about that. Tom's the IRA, but very close second is Curry.
Right, right. That's what people are showing up for. You know? it's going to be super exciting. Yeah. We also have a lot of opportunities for volunteers. I mean, I have a lot of people in the, you know, Midwest that aren't necessarily, you know, in the adoption foster care world, but the volunteer opportunities, can you talk a little bit about what we need there?
Yeah. So we have a ton of stuff for Refresh, obviously. At the conference, we have a lot of different roles, whether you're part of our welcome team, hospitality team, registration team, speaker hospitality. There's so many different roles. So, or even just helping with setup, or tear down, you know, various things like that. Like, those go such a long way. Like, we are a conference planning team of volunteers. So any extra hands that we can get that come and help just share that load is so huge. And guys, I'm telling you, this conference is so beautiful. Like, I always tell volunteers to really pay attention to the emotional atmosphere. Last year, as the conference ended, we had a huge like celebration line where we were just cheering and thanking our parents. And we had bells and signs and banners, and so many parents were moved to tears. Like, they never felt celebrated for what they've been doing and the sacrifices they feel like they've been making. And so, you know, it's so beautiful. So, you know, pouring a cup of coffee is a huge blessing, you know, like, these roles are significant. So if you have any time, the conference is in the beginning of October and we're hosting it at Wheaton Bible Church. So October 5th and 6th is the main conference and October 4th is the pre-conference. So any of those days, if you have any time you can offer us, we'd love that. Specifically for Replanted too, in our groups, you know, we are always looking for people that, have the gift of hospitality or love working with kids to step in to our ministry. So you can join our children's program. We're going to be really intentionally loving our kiddos with a fun programming this year. And so we're looking for people that want to shepherd different age groups of kids that are coming in. We're looking for people that want to bless our families by bringing a meal. So if you want to bring a meal to the church for our groups, that's awesome. We love that. There's just a lot of different ways. Curry, do you have some other ideas too?
No, that's all great. I mean, yeah, there is a way to get involved if you would like, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
We can find a spot for you. Just share email. And I'll have all those links in the show notes so people can just check it out and get signed up and all that stuff. So
absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah. So let's finish off with our final two questions that we like to ask, which the first one is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Oh, geez. Strangest job I've ever had. I mean, like, I grew up on a farm, so I milked cows. Is that weird?
No, I assumed that's where you were going to go with this one.
I shoveled manure, you know? So So that, but you know what? I loved it. I was so fun. I loved growing up on a farm. So it was just part of my life. But yeah, I milked cows, shoveled manure, all that fun stuff. So
that is incredible. I don't think anyone would ever know calves. That about you.
Yeah? I like put on the gloves and helped birth a calf, you know? So
are you for real?
Jack of all trades, guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, yep. If you're hiring for your farm, you know who to talk to, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's good times.
That's awesome. Okay. And then finally, what advice would you give to somebody trying to bring ministry or the kingdom of God into their vocation?
Oh, that's so good. So the one thing I think I would say is when it comes to ministry, or just trying to figure it out, there's nothing that's too small to do. I think sometimes we feel like we have to have it all together, or we have to have a certain level of expertise or knowledge and things to have our kingdom work be worthwhile. From my personal experience, when Replanted got started, I mean, I'm not a parent. And at that point, I wasn't even married. So I was a single person that was 28 years old starting a ministry for families. And goodness, it was sometimes I felt so like insecure, inadequate, you know, like what do I really have to offer? And I remember hearing a sermon from Father Kevin Miller that really sat with me. And the one thing he really said was, God did not make a mistake when he chose you. And so anytime when you start to feel discouraged or beaten down, or, you know, like maybe you don't have it all together, that just remind yourself of that. Like kingdom work is beautiful, and it's in the messy, and it's in the messy too of our own lives, you know? And so, but showing up is super important, and being faithful in that is really important.
Gosh, so, yeah. So well put. That's awesome.
Yeah. Especially for young people too. I think sometimes we feel like, you know, we have to have all the experiences to be able to contribute something meaningful. I feel like that's such a lie. You know, if you've got a heart and you've got a passion, you have ideas, those are beautiful. And, you know, see if you can live them out, you know, you have a lot to contribute. So your voice is important.
Yeah. Your story is, I love that you brought your story into that, because you were such a testament to that, like starting this and doing the work you did and volunteering for a long time doing it. So
yes, yes. Or bad boundaries.
No. Yes, right. We might need to process some more, you know.
No, but you know, when you're doing it, that's the thing too about ministry is I think at first I was like, oh yes, this is so of God. It's going to be easy. It's not. Ministry is always hard. there are times when you're going to be so discouraged and worn down and maybe even a little burnt out, and that's okay. Those seasons are definitely part of it. And so there's times to slow down and there's times to hit the gas pedal. You know, I would encourage people to always like be seeking support from pastors or just somebody that can really invest in you as a leader as well. But it's important work, and it's kingdom work. So yeah,
that's awesome. Well, thanks so much, Jen. I can't say thanks enough for taking time out and joining me.
Yeah.
And it was good to see you. So
good to be here. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
See you in October.
Yeah. Woo woo.
All right. Bye. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Jen. I really enjoy talking about a lot of that stuff. It's really a passion of JJ and I's, the adoption and foster care thing. And I think it's just so important as Christians and Christians that work with kids and do children's ministry, that we are trauma-informed people, that we seek to understand what these children's brains are going through, because it's hard and it's hard to understand sometimes. So I just ask you, just get informed. I would love to help you out with that, honestly. JJ, my wife's a TBRI practitioner. We're parent trainers. And so if you have, you know, questions about that sort of stuff, we would love to chat with you about that. It's a really cool thing we got going on. Replanted Refresh is going to be incredible. So anybody you know that is in the adoptive foster care, you know, world, that knows people, that has family, tell them to come to this conference, because it is going to be epic and a lot of fun. And it's good stuff. So until next time, get out there and hustle.
Bye.